This is the Calvary Bible Church podcast. Thanks for listening in today. We're praying this message encourages you. Learn more about Calvary and join us online each Sunday for services at calvarybible.com.
Thank you for worshiping with us online, Calvary Bible Church. My name is Zach Thompson, and I am on staff here. And I was thinking about how we can tell some things about someone just by looking at them. Now, I don't mean the cruel way that we come up with judgments about someone based solely off of their appearance. I also don't mean what we experience in the crucible of high school, where wearing the wrong item of clothing could plummet our social standing. But who even remembers the day that I wore two different shoes to school? I know I don't. I mean instead that there are things that we can learn about someone, things that are revealed by looking at them. There are identifiers about them. When we're at a sporting event, we can clearly identify which person is on which team because they have an identifier. They have a specific jersey. When we are in need of help at Best Buy, we can easily tell who works there and who doesn't by their ruining for the rest of the world the ability to wear a blue shirt with khakis. There are things that we can tell about someone just by looking at them. There are certain identifiers about them. So my question for us is, what does it mean to be part of God's people? What is the identifier for us? Christians have tried a variety of objects. There's a "What Would Jesus Do" bracelet. There's a "He is greater than I" sticker. There's a Striper t-shirt. But the Bible tells us time and time again what this identifier is. What is it that people can look and see and know that that person is part of God's people? It's not a jersey. It's not a uniform. It's not even an ichthys, a Jesus, a fish on our car. It's our life. The way that we live is so shaped by God that people can just look at us and know that we are one of His. Our love for Him, our lives for Him are so uncontainable that all people do is look at us and know that we are part of God's people. One of the best negative examples of this is in the Old Testament. God rescued His people Israel from Egypt, from slavery, and all the pain and hardship that was there. And as He is going to a place that He has prepared for them, leading and guiding them every step of the way, they rebel. They say, "We will not follow and live for this God. It was better back where we were, better as slaves." And so as they want to live in this way apart from God, God gives them exactly what they want without this guidance, without this provision, and things do not go well for them. But their kids, this next generation is faithful. They are living. Their life is a marker, an identifier that they are God's people, and they are on the brink of going to that prepared place, this promised land, but there's still that warning. Your ancestors, your fathers, they were unfaithful. Israel, as you enter into this new place, will you continue to follow after God? Will your life be the identifier that you are part of God's people? Will you remain faithful? And that's how we get to the book of Deuteronomy. It's an entire book that is a charge to the Israelites to remain faithful going into this promised land. And no place gives this more clearly than Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9. Let me read from that. Deuteronomy chapter 6, starting in verse 4, it says this. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command to you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hands, and they shall be like a frontlet between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." So there's this charge to Israel to remain faithful, and it all starts with this word, "hear." This passage is an incredibly famous passage, and it's known simply by the word Shema. Shema is that word hear in Hebrew. And I say it's a famous passage because even today, religious Jews have the call on their lives to repeat this twice each day. So as we're in this series, this summer playlist, returning to the passages that we need to, the truths that we constantly need to be reminded of, this was one of the first that came to mind for me. The Shema, hear. But we would miss it if we take our common understanding of the word hear and place that in what is happening in this passage. Currently, you can hear my voice. If I rustle my notes, you might hear that. Before this, you heard voices and instruments and melodies. But in this passage, it's more than just experience the sensation of these words. It's more like a parent who calls for their child to do something. And if that child is capable of understanding and listening to those words, but does not do what is asked, it's hard to say that that child heard what was said to them. If we are on the shoreline of a lake and someone is out there and they're struggling to stay afloat, pleading for help, and we can hear that and we can understand what those words mean, but we remain on that shoreline, it's hard to say that we heard them. See, hearing in this is not just I hear and acknowledge that these words are there. To hear in this passage is to listen and to obey. Hear, O Israel, this is who your God is. This is what he has done. This is what your life is to look like. But don't miss the beauty of this as well in that. It says that we are able to hear of who our God is. This isn't guesswork. This isn't trying to read tarot cards or roll dice to figure out God's will or what he's like or who he is. All we have to do is listen. Hear, O Israel. This is who your God is. He is choosing to reveal himself to you. Well, what do we see is revealed about God in this passage? I think if we return to verse 4, we could see that a little bit. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." Now, that might seem a little anticlimactic. That's all that it says. But remember, this is a nation that has been repeating these stories. Even Deuteronomy 6, it comes straight after this time of, "Here is all that God has done for you. Hear about our God who created the universe. Hear about our God who called our ancestor Abraham and promised to make a great nation of him. Hear about our God who rescued our parents from slavery and the hardship and pain there and prepared a place where they could be with this God. Hear about our God who remained faithful, who is taking us to this nation that we can be with him. The God of the universe, we can be with him. Hear about this God who is one." And there's so much packed into that little phrase. I think there's two ways of reading this. We can hear this as the oneness of God and the exclusivity of God. So when we read that God is one, it should point us to the oneness of God. Now, I get that. That may sound like I'm just saying the same thing in two different ways. But this is what I mean. With God being one, it means that he is whole. He is complete in and of himself. He needs nothing outside of him. God is one. That's the oneness of God. And this is so important because Israel was surrounded by other nations who worshiped false gods, and Israel would have seen what that was like. And so when they hear that God is one, it should remind them they were in Egypt where there was a pantheon of gods, where these needed to interact off of each other, where they were incomplete without the other. And that's not the case here. It's not the right time chronologically, but many of us know of the Greek god Zeus. And Zeus was similar to the gods of this area, where in one story he could be smoke billowingly powerful, and in the next he could be petty and almost human-like. But that's not your God, Israel. That's not your God, Calvary. Your God is one. He does not need anything outside of him to interact with people or to decide or to know what to do or to be God. No, God is one. He does not wake up one day on the wrong side of a divine pillow and change his entire interactions with his people. No, your God is one. He is not of two minds trying to figure out, what's the best thing to do? No, your God is one. So as we read that, we should be reminded of the oneness of God. But it also should point us to the exclusivity of God, He and He alone. Again, remember, there were whole pantheons of gods around them, and that's not the case here. God and God alone is worthy of devotion, of worship, of praise, of all that we have. He and He alone is worthy of all that. He does not need anything else. Nothing else is worthy of praise beyond Him. So Israel, as you are entering into this promised land, do not be tempted to return or to turn to these gods around you. Your God is one. Now, our temptation is a little bit different. We rarely are tempted to offer animal sacrifices to Ra or Baal, but we still do have the same temptation as Israel, where we turn to other gods or we take things and we elevate them to that status. What is it that we give our devotion to? What is it that we seek to be our identifier if it's not God? Is it a job? I know this is a struggle for me at times, even in a role where I'm always trying to grow in devotion to God. I have a role where the title of it can be a substitute for my name in conversation, pastor. You hear this as well with judge or doctor or Mr. President. And as people lovingly call me that, it's easy for me to puff myself up and think that I have done well to get myself here, that I have placed myself in the station deserving of respect instead of correctly honoring the God who has put me there. What is it that we give our devotion to? What is it that we make an identifier in our lives? Is it status? Is it wealth? Is it the God of club sports? Is it our family that God has given us? See, we are created to be in relationship with our God. From the very first pages of the Bible, people were with God, giving Him the honor and devotion and praise that He deserves. But if we are not turning to the God who is one, the one true God with that, we will seek to fill that with something, with anything. But the problem is if we are not turning to the one who deserves it, who can correctly receive that, we take a thing or a person and we elevate it to a status that it was never meant for. God is an exclusive God. God is whole and needs nothing outside of Him. And we are called to worship the God who is one. And so what is our identifier? What is the marker that shows that we are part of God's people? It is our lives. Because of who God is, because of what He has done, we live in a way that is obedient to Him. Now, it's really important that we get that order correct. And the Bible shows this time and time again. It is because of who God is. It reveals what He has done constantly. It reveals His nature. It reveals His interaction with people. And because He has done that, we turn to Him and Him alone. We obey Him and Him alone. As we see His love for us, His power, His will, His tremendous attributes that we are made in the image of Him, as we see all of these, we recognize that He and He alone is worthy of our obedience. And our passage tells us that the beginning of this obedience is love. Look at verse 5. It says this, "You shall love the Lord your God." So because this is who God is, because of all that He has done, because He is one, we are to love Him. God has been more faithful than any human spouse in the history of humanity. He has been pursuing His people. He has been caring and providing for them, whether they knew it or not. And the response is that is we are resolved to love Him in return. Moses continues, who is writing this and is delivering the speech to the Israelites. He shows the depth of this love that we are to give to God. Continue in verse 5, he says, "You are to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might." Now, these aren't random attributes that are being listed here, but rather in the Hebrew understanding of a person was made up of these three parts of heart, of soul, of might. This is what makes up a person. For the understanding of heart, we can easily replace this with mind. It's the location of all thought and rationality. So when you read through the Bible and you see the psalmist say, give us clean hands and a pure heart, we see that those go hand in hand. As someone has their thoughts and their focus on God, it works out that their lives will be following him as well. So the heart is really the center, the core of a person. And so to love God with all your heart is to love him with all your thoughts and beliefs, your entire core of yourself. With soul, we can easily replace this with the word spirit. It's that which is immaterial within us. As you read through the Bible, as this word comes up, it's often linked to emotions. So you see elsewhere, my soul cries out. But it's more than that. It also talks about a body that is missing this spirit, this soul, that's a dead body. It's not living. And so to worship God with our entire soul is to give him all of our emotions. Yes, but that what makes us alive, that which is most like him, our spirit that he has given us in our creation. And to worship God, to love God with all of our might. This is our strength, our physicality. And more than that, it's also the work that those produce. It continues even to our very possessions. So to love God with all of our might is with our entire beings, our physicality, the works of our hands, and in fact, all that we have. Now, this isn't a checklist. We don't look at the end of it and wonder, did I worship God with my might today or was it just my soul? No. This is given to us to show the entire person. You, God's people, are living in a way that loves God with all of your might and your soul and your heart. You are loving him with all that makes you you. In fact, your very possessions are being given to God, offered to God as an act of love for him because of who he is and what he has done. So what is the marker of those who are in God's family? What is it that identify us, that people can just look at God's people and know they are part of his family? They belong to him. Well, it's our very lives. It's the love that we give back to God with all that we have because of all that he has done for us. It's so significant that when Jesus is asked, what is the greatest commandment? He quotes from the Shema, from Deuteronomy 6, when he says, it is to love the Lord your God. But that isn't the end of it. Because as we know, as we are more captured by who God is and what he has done, as we read throughout his word and we see time and time again of his faithfulness, as we look in our history and we see God entering into the lives of people to show time and time again his love for us, it builds and builds and our lives are lived in such a way that we cannot contain it. The results are uncontainable. Look at our passage again. We'll pick it up in verse 6. It says, and these words that I command to you today shall be on your heart. They shall be written even inside of you. And you shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hands and they shall be like frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. As we experience more of who God is, you know and love the Lord your God. He is one. As we experience more of that, we cannot help it. It just spills out of us. It's uncontainable. The passage says to teach these things that God is one, of who he is, of what he has done, that our life is lived in love for him, that we are shaped and molded by him. Teach these things diligently. I think of an image like this. When I was in, I think, elementary school, we had desks that were made out of wood. Well, I mean, it wasn't really wood. It was more just compressed sheets of wood. But anyways, you get the idea. And the part that was underneath it, where we kept all of our books and pencils and every bit of trash that we ever generated and last month's lunch, that part was also made out of wood as well. And what we started to do is we would start simple and we would just write something there. Could be just a word or a short phrase. Most of the time it was just our name that was written, and we can never figure out how they knew it was us that did it. But we'd start and we'd just write it there and we'd trace over it time and time again, just repeating the same pattern that we wrote there to begin with. And over time, over the course of a school year, we would actually carve into the wood of that desk. And see, if you just wrote that there, well, I mean, someone could come by and they could paint over it and it's gone. But we are actually making something that was permanent. We are making an impression. We were making an impact in what was there by just repeating the same process over and over again. And that's what's being talked about here. Teach these things diligently. It's not some tremendous sermon that's being delivered at this point. It's not some grand magnum opus that is written that's going to change the lives of others, but it's the faithful, slow process of just repeating the same simple truths time and time again. That makes an impact. That is being carved in. That is how you place something in the hearts of those who are around you. The passage talks time and time again about to teach these to your children. And if you don't have children, maybe you're thinking you're off the hook here. And that's not the case. We'll talk about all of us in a little bit, but simply look at this. The passage says, "Hear, O Israel." It's not addressed solely to parents. It's addressed to all who are following after God. All who follow after God are called to make this impact in the lives of those around us. Then have this life that's lived so people can look at us and know we are part of God's people. To have an impact on those around us by slowly repeating the truths of who God is and what he's done. But we can't get past the call that this is making on parents. Because as we read this, we realize that the greatest evangelistic technique to help the next generation know who God is moms and dads. Discipleship actually starts as family discipleship. But the order of this is significant because you cannot give away what you don't have. So parents who are there, are you loving God with all that you are, living in a way that people can look at you and know that you are part of God's people? Don't actually answer that. And don't hear that as me putting shame on anyone. This is why we gather as a church. This is why we encourage and build up one another. It's why we return to passages like this so that we can be reminded of the truth of who God is, what he has done, and what he's calling us to be. We're all falling short of this, and we all need to come together to be encouraged in this. It's why we as a church have set up our children's ministry in a way that helps support parents. It's why we have set up our student ministry in this way, men's and women's ministry, our life groups, our preaching. You can go right now to calvarybible.com/parents and find tons of resources sorted by age group, depending on how old your child is, just to help you in this tremendous role that's been given to you. And the reason why we place so much emphasis on this is because you are discipling your child whether you like it or not. You are carving something time and time again every time you act in front of your child. You are giving them something to mimic and to follow. You are showing them what is worthy of their devotion. We cannot be surprised to find a generation who sees the church as disposable when that is exactly what their parents have been teaching them. And so we have this tremendous call that is placed on us we have a tremendous responsibility that is given to parents to help their children know who God is, to point them to them. Tell these things to your children in all that you are doing. Repeat this process. Point them to the truths of who God is in all it is that you are doing so that you are slowly and faithfully tracing over the same truths time and time again until they make an impression. So how do we do this? If this is the call on parents, how are parents to help point their children to Jesus? This is the beauty of the passage, because nothing is added. If you look through it again, it's use those times that you already have. As you rise, as you go out, as you sit, it's not saying to add anything to it. It's just reworking those to use them as times to point to God within it. As you sit down, it says, well, we sit down in the house sometimes. Sometimes I do that quite a bit. And that is a excellent opportunity to speak to your child, to point them to the truth, to help remind them of who God is and what they've done. As you walk, maybe you do that as a family, but most often our form of transport is actually the car. Anyone drive their kids around? Anyone feel like all they do is drive their kids around? Well, that is an excellent opportunity to remind them of who God is and what He has done. This is a chance to ask questions, to help connect the moments of their life with their God who loves them. This is, oh, this happened to you today. What do you think this shows us about what God is like? Oh, this is occurring. Why do you think God is trying to teach us in this moment? It's just inviting them to ask those questions. And here's the great relief. The greatest thing that you could do to love your child is to actually love God more and more. That's the order of this. Here's who God is. Love your God. And this is loving God in such a way that it's spilling out to other people. So parents, we are called to make the next generation know God. And the way to do that is simply by loving God ourselves in such a way that it's noticeable, that we are marked and identified by that love and that it spills out. And we are intentionally using and reworking the time that we already have to point our children to Jesus. And I do mean intentionally. This might involve setting alerts, reminders, whatever needs to happen to remind yourself that the things you are already doing can be incredible opportunities for the gospel. And I said, those who don't have children, we are not immune from this call either. We too are called to live in such a way that we are identified, that we can be known as God's people just from the way that we love, just from the way that we are living Him. Because again, this charge is not just to parents, it's to all of Israel. And the difference between Israel in this passage and us now is Israel is about to enter the promised land. There's no Gentiles around. Only those who are there, the only ones who are there that need to know about God are in fact children. We're in a different place where we're surrounded by people who need to know God. So we too live in a way that loves and demonstrates this and slowly carves and impresses upon those around us the truth of who God is. We too aren't adding anything onto it, but intentionally reworking what we are already doing because we are recognizing just as God has uniquely placed parents in a spot to point their children to Him, we have been uniquely placed where we are to do the same for those in our lives. Because of who God is, because of what He's done, our lives are changed. We are shaped and molded by Him. And people can look at us and just by the lives that we are living, from the love that we are showing of this God, we are identified as His people. And that is more impactful than any shirt or uniform or fish on our car or sticker or a bracelet ever could be. Calvary, as we said, no one is on this journey alone. We want to help you get in community that can help spur you on to bring about a reminder of who God is and what He has done in your life as well, so that you can live in such a way where people can look at you and know you're a part of God's people, that you are living in such a way that you are making an impression on others in your life. Parents, we know this is a tremendous task, and so we always want to support you. We are giving you resources in the ministry areas that you have kids, whether that's kids ministry or students. We want to help support you to recognize this great task that's been given to you, but an even greater support system that is here to help you do it. We know that God is so good. We know that God has done so much for us, and it is because of that that we live for Him and Him alone. So as you go out, as you continue to follow after Him in your life, as we end our time together, let's remember that it is all because of God. That it is exclusively because of Him, that He alone is worthy of our devotion and our life and our love. And so we do that with all that we have. It's to Him that we pray to. Amen.